Let's get tough on crime, tough on crime. I wanna get tough on crime, tough on crime.
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymie Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, tough on crime. Hello, and thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Hey, how are you? How was your morning?
Well, I'm struggling.
Yeah.
The struggle is real. So
you're
I'm
on
tired.
The struggle bus.
I'm on the struggle bus. I'm tired. Teaching just takes so much out of you. I try to explain to people how much energy you expel teaching versus other things, because you're projecting and trying to be passionate and trying to like walk around and
And it's only day one.
It's day one.
Yeah. So today we're recording this episode on the first day of class of the fall 2024 semester. So you taught today.
I did.
My first class is tomorrow. Did you make any significant changes in your classes or policies this semester?
I did not.
You didn't?
No, I didn't even like add any more stuff about AI, mainly because I'm teaching research methods and we don't have any papers that are not like assignments.
Right,
so it's hard to see how that fits into that class. So I didn't spend much time. What about you?
Oh yeah, I sure did. Like I totally revamped my classes. They have no out of class writing assignments.
None?
I bumped up. No, none.
None.
The only out of class assignment they have is a final video essay. So they have to do a video essay instead of a written essay. We'll see how that goes. But
because you're
quizzes.
Just done.
I'm so done. I've said my role model for this year is Arnold Schwarzenegger in Kindergarten Cop. It's not a tumor. Do your best Arnold impression.
I don't have an Arnold impression.
Oh, okay. Well, like I bumped up the points for attendance. I'm having a strict attendance policy.
Yes.
So it's like, you know,
yeah.
It's time to turn this mush into muscle. There is no bathroom. So, yeah.
You're not even going to let anyone go to the bathroom.
Well, like last year during my exam, students would just like get up and leave. So
during the exam?
Yeah, during the exam. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, sometimes they'd be like, can I go to the bathroom? But sometimes they would just walk out. So like, I'm done with that.
Yeah, this is turning into a complaining session. So even though you're getting tough this semester, right?
It's time to get tough.
Get tough, but not on crime, right?
Well, I mean, in the strictest sense, no, but I'm going to say like what my students did to me last year was a crime. It was criminal.
It's criminal. It could be prosecuted.
Yeah, for sure. I've always wanted to have a taser as part of my job, but anyway, let's talk about the tough on crime movement today. I think I mentioned doing an episode on this like way back the last time we did a prison episode.
Yes. Yeah, so tell us, what is get tough or get tough on crime in quotation marks?
Yeah, well, that's actually a tough question. And so this will be my last complaint, but since my students have had no problem plagiarizing and using AI recently, I'm going to steal their generic opening essay sentence.
Okay.
Get tough on crime has existed since the beginning of time. Not, it's really only been since the 1970s, but that's like since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
And it's hard to define because it means many different things to many different people.
Yeah. Is this an AI generated answer?
No, that's just like the stereotypical like,
intro.
Whenever they're reaching for something, it's always like to open an opener. It's like since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
Or in my 400 class, when I say like define justice, they're like, justice is hard to define. Because it means different things to different people.
It's like, no, we have definitions. Thanks.
But anyway, tough on crime can be different things depending upon how people are using it or thinking about it. So it can be like a system of beliefs or an ideology.
Right.
Or it can be a set of sentencing practices and punitive policies. Or it can, you know, sometimes people use it to refer it's like the system of mass incarceration and overcrowding, although I would say that more specifically that's kind of the outcome or consequence of get tough.
Okay, so I would say most people kind of have a sense of what get tough on crime means, but what about the history?
Yeah, for sure.
You mentioned it started in the 1970s, so let's go back.
Yeah, I'll come back and talk about those three aspects of Get Tough later. But for now, let's strap on our bell bottoms. Let's get groovy to some ABBA. You are the dancing queen.
I think groovy is a 60s term. not a 70s thing.
Well, what would be the 70s?
I think bell bottoms might be. No, it's the bell bottoms were 70s yeah. too. Mm-hmm. ABBA definitely ABBA started 70s in the 70s.
Sure. I looked up their songs to make sure they were all in the 70s. So anyway, Dance well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or can you hear the drums, Fernando? I was doing my role this morning. Yeah. I've got a Fernandez in class. So I was singing like, you know, Fernando. Anyway, so by the early 1970s, crime was on the rise. And we've talked about in our vigilante and pop culture episode how a lot of Americans believe society was on the decline. It was too permissive. It was too lenient.
Right.
So at this time in correctional history, we refer to it as the medical model of corrections. And that means that the system was supposed to be built on rehabilitation, and prisons were supposed to function like hospitals, treating offenders like patients with a problem to fix and then release when they're all better.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah. But crimes were increasing. Like I said, people were generally dissatisfied with the quote unquote permissiveness of society.
And all those hippies.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. That's the 60s.
Well, kind of like 60s. But anyway, you know, the idea was like, well, we've been doing this rehabilitation thing for decades and crime is increasing, so obviously it's not working.
Right.
And there was a famous criminologist at the time, Robert Martinson was his name, and he released a report called Nothing Works. And it was basically an overview of research where he, you know, concluded that no rehabilitation works, no rehabilitation programs work. And that report became very popular, particularly with politicians who wanted to use crime and get tough approaches for, you know, political purposes. So it kind of became a slogan of like the get tough era that nothing works.
Right. And that report was wrong and flawed. And they did, researchers, criminologists did a follow up to that.
Yeah, for sure. So I think I have a whole rehabilitation
episode
planned for the future. So we'll kind of come back and talk more about that sometime later, but in short, rehabilitation can be effective when done right.
Yes.
And a big problem is that it oftentimes isn't implemented correctly, or it's not based on research evidence. But even in Martinson's report, he had some flaws in his reporting that you know, there were rehabilitative programs that were being effective at the time, but he just missed it or misinterpreted them. And he, in fact, later came out and retracted some of his findings. But we'll talk about rehabilitation in a future episode down the road.
Lovely.
But anyway, crime rates were rising. You know, politicians were kind of capitalizing on the issue. Nothing Works was a major slogan. And so that kind of resulted in some major changes in the system. And it wasn't really just a conservative issue. Republicans and Democrats really for decades were both about get tough on crime.
Yep.
So, for example, Clinton's 1994 crime bill is one of the major pieces of get tough legislation.
Yes, so I'll save my politics statement until my spin, since I've got a little Nixon reference.
Oh, nice. Sounds
good. So what is Get Tough? Get back to those three things you mentioned before.
Yeah, so first and foremost, Get Tough is like a belief system and an ideology that punishment, harsh punishment, is the right and the best and most effective way to respond to and stop crime. So, you know, in one sense, that sounds logical and intuitive. Like, if the system's too soft, it's too lenient, that's why people are committing crimes and why crime is getting worse. But obviously, we'll talk about why that may not necessarily be the case.
True.
But, you know, the idea that the system was too lenient on criminals was a big, you know, slogan then. And it's a common refrain even today, driven, you know, I think. This is, you know, kind of like personal opinion, but I think largely that's driven by like celebrity cases that oftentimes get acquitted of these very serious crimes, and people see that and think, well, that's the way the system works, that the system is too soft and dangerous murderers and child molesters are being freed. And that's not the case, that people are not getting punished harsh enough. We talked about that in our Dirty Harry episode.
Go back and listen. Mm-hmm. So in 2018, the average time served for murder was almost 20 years.
Yep.
And research in 2022 found the U.S. has some of the longest sentences in the world, even compared to countries with higher rates of violence than we have.
Right.
And 83% of people in the entire world sentenced to life without parole were sentenced in the U.S. And I think it's Prison Policy Initiative, which I'll link to in the show notes, that has a nice graph with all of the countries listed and where the U.S. follows. And it also breaks the U.S. down by state.
Right.
And I mean, compares it to the rest of the countries around the world.
Yeah, exactly. If we treated each state in the U.S. like its own country, like most of them would still, you know, rank as like the top 10 highest incarcerators in the world.
Right.
And this is after the Get Tough era, but that's just to kind of demonstrate that we're not lenient on crime as many people believe. We're actually probably toughest on crime.
Getting tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another aspect of this is that, you know, criminals specifically, you know, targets of like Get Tough reforms are dangerous people whose behavior will not be responsive to lower sentences, and particularly that, you know, crime's like an individual problem committed by bad, evil people.
Right.
So it's this notion that criminals are different than us, and Get Tough thinking particularly separates us into like an us versus them.
Yes.
Rather, you know, rather than recognizing that most people actually commit crime, it kind of categorizes like we're the sweet, nice, innocent people, and the people who commit crime are the monsters that prey on us, nice, sweet, innocent people. And usually those, you know, depictions of offenders are kind of like street level persons of a particular, you know, color, race, and social class. So usually this Get Tough idea is focused on street level, you know, robbers, rapists, and murderers, and particularly those that target strangers. So this is the idea of the criminal that we need to get tough.
Yeah, there's no one saying let's get tougher on white collar criminals or corporations.
Regulations. For sure. It's and we've talked about these ideas before, like public misperception about crime and victimization, particularly in our victimization episode.
Right.
And then, of course, the ultimate idea is that harsher punishment will reduce crime, particularly by incapacitating and deterring criminals. So it's about a punishment philosophy that relies on deterrence, particularly in incapacitation. So deterrence, I don't know if we've specifically defined deterrence before.
I don't remember at this point. Surely we did in the prison episode, right?
Maybe. You know, it's also a fairly common idea anyway. But deterrence is the idea that if you punish someone harshly enough, they won't do it again.
Right.
And that's specifically specific deterrence. You punish an individual harshly so that they will be deterred from repeating their crime.
Yes.
And then, you know, the other aspect is if you punish everyone harsh enough, then people won't commit crime in the first place because they're too scared of getting punished. And that's general deterrence, a general and specific deterrence.
Yeah.
So, you know, harsh punishment deters or scares people from committing crime, stop people from committing crime because they're afraid of getting punished. What's wrong with that line of thinking?
Well, there's a lot of reasons that deterrence doesn't work in criminal punishment. One, crime is more complicated than an individual weighing the pros and cons of a punishment.
Yeah, I mean, deterrence kind of assumes that people are like sitting there before they commit a crime and doing a pros and cons list.
Yes. So, like when I was considering deflating my neighbor's tires because I almost committed a crime. Mm-hmm. I'm just kidding, people. I didn't almost do it, but I didn't think about it. Mm-hmm. So I thought about committing a crime. Anyway, like I'm not weighing the pros and cons of doing that. Yeah. I'm just like, stop thinking that.
You thought about it, but didn't do it because you had self-control.
I have self-control leading to the next one. Low self-control and greater risk-taking behavior are the strongest individual correlates of crime and by definition are not prone to rationalize or consequential thinking. And also, we've already talked about the fact that we are low risk takers, so neither one of us would be doing anything to put ourselves in that position.
Right. And so, you know, if you are someone who you know, has a hard time controlling your impulses or you're like a very risky person, you're not sitting there, you know, weighing out the pros and cons and like thinking through the consequences anyway.
Yeah, I mean, there's a level of impulsivity there as well.
For sure.
People don't know or can't estimate the reality of punishment or have misperceptions about punishment.
Yeah, so I mean, criminal law and state criminal statutes are really complicated to begin with. Yes. Lawyers have a hard time with it. So like the average person doesn't know, you know, what the punishment or the potential punishments for a crime are. So you can't. And then, you know, you got the perceptions of like, what's the likelihood of getting caught or getting away with it? So, you know, people aren't really good at kind of predicting the future in that way.
Imagine that. Mm-hmm. And also the system does not work in a way that would accomplish deterrence.
Yeah, so even if we would presume that deterrence works, our system doesn't really operate in conjunction with deterrence theory. So, you know, punishment has to be harsh, which obviously it is, but it has to be certain, and it's not, clearance rates are low, punishment has to be swift, trials take a long time. So the way that we do criminal justice is not even in conjunction with theory of deterrence.
Right.
And I'll also say, we can cut this out. This is one thing we can cut out if it gets too long.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll also say, like, a lot of times critics of Get Tough kind of throw in retribution here. And we talked about, like, retributive impulses as this idea that criminals deserve to suffer. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about pure retributive punishment theory, it's really about proportion and balance. That the punishment should fit the crime. So if you're a true retributivist, you would be just as opposed to punishment that's too harsh as you are punishment that is too lenient or too soft. Whereas deterrence theory would really argue for kind of this unending, never-ending appetite for harsher punishment. So either way, with the deterrence theory, the solution is more punishment. So if crime's not going down, we're obviously not being harsh enough, so we need to get harsher on crime.
Right.
And if crime does start going down, then it's, well, deterrence obviously works, so we need to get harsher. So, you know, whatever happens with crime from a deterrence perspective, the solution is harsher.
Right.
Harsher punishment.
Right.
So that's the belief system of Get Tough. But Get Tough may also refer to a set of sentencing practices or a web of sentencing policies. So specifically things like determinate sentencing, mandatory minimums, three strikes, the war on drugs. Those are oftentimes referred to as Get Tough sentencing or Get Tough legislation. Mm-hmm. So determinate sentencing is about, like eliminating parole release, particularly. So, indeterminate sentencing, you've got that wide range of years and the parole board determines determinate sentencing. The defining feature is just getting rid of parole release, making sure that people are not eligible for release early from their sentence. Mandatory minimums, those are those legislatively established minimum sentences that if you're convicted or plead guilty to a crime, you have to serve that sentence, at least that sentence, no matter what. Three strikes, everybody knows what three strikes is. Your third felony or third violent felony, you go to prison for life. And then the war on drugs, that kind of harsh sentences for drug crimes and drug possession, in particular in that prison is the place for drug offenders.
Right.
So I know a long time ago when I would hear the war on drugs, I used to think of like, DEA agents or like the military overseas in the jungles of Colombia fighting drug cartels. Yeah. That's what I imagined as the war on drugs.
Yeah.
But really the war on drugs was largely about putting, people who had quantities of drugs on their person, drug users and drug possessors.
Okay.
So anyway, those are the Get Tough policies, sentencing policies and legislations. And then I mentioned that sometimes like our system of mass incarceration and prison overcrowding is also like kind of called Get Tough. But like I said before, I really think it's more appropriate to think of that as like the outcome or the consequences of Get Tough. So in 2009, which is kind of like the height of the Get Tough mass incarceration, there were 2.3 million people in prison or jails. We had seen, for decades, huge increases, like, eight times increase in prison population.
Right.
We had both the highest number of people in prison in the world, as well as the highest incarceration rates in the world. And then, of course, our prison population, criminal justice population, is heavily racially disproportional.
Right.
So how did Get Tough on crime ideology and legislation create this system, create this problem? Well, scholars have kind of broken it down into kind of three phases. So initially, in like the first decade or so, 75 to 85, you had those borderline offenders going to prison or an increase in felony conviction. So it's this idea that, you've got those people who could get probation or who could get prison, and the people that we were kind of given probation to in the past, now we're sending to prison.
Yes. Thanks a lot. In large part to district attorneys, because I just read a paper about how district attorneys were responsible for so much of this.
Yeah. And a lot of times critics of Get Tough really kind of point to like these sentencing policies and almost seems like, oh, this kind of accidental, intractable right. problem that all yeah. of these laws or policies created. But sure. really, particularly in those early years, there's lots of studies that show that, you know, we were just sending people to prison more yeah. than we were in the past.
Yeah.
And it was increase in incarceration for the for a felony conviction and sure. not any kind of
decision-based.
Yeah, singular policy. Right.
Right.
So the next phase was kind of the war on drugs, like the mid-80s to the mid-90s, and this is when, you know, really we started sending people for, you know, drug possession, drug users, to prison for, you know, that we weren't sending them for in the past, and then sending them to prison for longer periods of time.
Right, right.
And then, you know, kind of in the late 90s to 2010 or so, that's when really some of the effects of those sentencing policies kicked in, where like the increase in sentence length was really contributing to incarceration.
An increase in elderly population in prison.
Yeah, the graying of the prison population.
Right.
For sure. So the analogy that I use in class about how Get Tough created mass incarceration, I compare it to a traffic jam, and particularly to Port Republic Road.
Yes, because students can relate.
Yeah,
because
they know exactly what that is.
Yeah.
So like we started sending a lot more people to prison for things that we weren't sending them for in the past. So when it's time to go to class, all of the students coming onto Port Republic Road from their housing complexes.
Yeah.
So everybody's trying to get on Port Republic Road.
Yes.
And then you had those sentencing policies that extended length of stay.
Yes.
That stopped early parole release.
Right.
And those are those like four or five traffic lights right at the bottom of Port Republic Road. So you've got everybody trying to get on Port Republic Road. Nobody, you know, like one light will be green and the rest will be red. Nobody can get
through. And everyone's stuck.
Yeah. And pretty soon you've got traffic backed all the way up to, you know, Food Line.
Right.
So that's like, you know, mass incarceration on Port Republic Road.
Yes. So Get Tough definitely created a system problem, mm-hmm. mass incarceration and overcrowding. So how did Get Tough work?
So I'm guessing like, you know, did it reduce crime?
Yes. Kind of did it reduce crime?
Because it would be difficult to call system of mass incarceration and overcrowding a success in and of itself. It's expensive, major social problem, overcrowding, over-policing, over-punishment, particularly of people of color. So not a success.
Yeah.
That, you know, does not sound successful. So does a tough on crime approach reduce crime? Does it make society safer? And we would probably need a whole episode really to pick.
We'll add that to the list, very long list.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's like three or four that I've mentioned are like future topics here.
Future topic.
But in short, most criminologists would agree that Get Tough has had a marginal, if any, effect on crime. So crime started plummeting in 1994.
Yes.
And of course, the reasons why is a complicated issue. But most criminologists would say that punishment and imprisonment was not a major reason that crime fell, and has continued to fall, with kind of the exception of the 2020 COVID spike in gun violence. Another great episode.
Yeah, we definitely need idea. To do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so if we're looking at kind of like the Get Tough period for like the first two decades, crime was increasing.
Mm-hmm.
The second two decades, you know, crime was plummeting. So there's kind of, if we're just kind of simplistically look at it, there's no you know, common pattern between, you know, Get Tough and crime rates. At the most, being the most generous, you know, prisons may incapacitate violent and repeat offenders, but only half of the prison population are violent offenders. You know, over half have people who are in prison aren't even there for violent offenses.
Right.
So perhaps, but they also disrupt families, they disrupt jobs, they disrupt communities.
Yes.
And those are the main things that most criminologists agree keep people from committing crime.
Right.
And, you know, further than that, prisons also expose individuals to a violent prison subculture.
Right.
And we've talked about high recidivism rates before. So getting tough on crime, most criminologists would agree, has not made society substantially safer. And maybe it's created a lot more problems than it solved, which really hasn't solved any.
True, true. So that means we're through with Get Tough on Crime, ideology and practice.
Yep. Problem solved.
Ding, ding.
Not. So there was a time in the early 20-teens where it looked like maybe things were changing. Particularly the 2008 recession was a major motivator for talks of reform. Right. So like from
because they're looking at money, you know, like how much money we're spending.
Exactly. So like from 2008 to about 2016, there was a lot of bipartisan talk about change and some minor policy changes to repeal some of the worst get tough stuff. And in 2009, prison populations actually started declining marginally and have declined marginally ever since then. You know, we've seen a reduction in the war on drugs. Many states have begun decriminalizing and legalizing marijuana, even recreational marijuana use. There have been some repeals of mandatory minimums and harsh sentencing laws and some interest in things like restorative justice and evidence-based practice. And we have generally seen a greater public interest and awareness of racial injustice in the system. Like I'm thinking about like the new Jim Crow, Michelle Alexander, that was like a book
very popular.
Was not just for academics. Like the public consumed that.
Yes.
And, you know, the George Floyd protests.
Yes.
So there's been a greater social awareness of some of these problems.
Right.
And really up until about 2016, you heard both sides kind of talking like this about reducing prison population and saving lots of money. But since 2016, and especially since 2020, we've seen a major return to the get tough rhetoric. Like society is too lenient. The justice system is too lenient, particularly focusing on things like quote unquote liberal prosecutors and bail reform being, you know, problems that have turned cities into crime ridden hellscapes. And we need a strong, tough on crime leader to solve these problems. So it really didn't take very long at all for tough on crime to kind of rear its head again.
Yeah.
So early 20 teens, I might have said, you know, it looks like we might be moving beyond this and we might be taking a more thoughtful approach to crime response, but I would not say that now.
Oh, well, we've ended on a very bad note. Mm-hmm. Very bad note.
Well, I mean, I guess that's it.
That's
you got
it.
Anything else?
Nope.
Well, I guess we'll wrap it up then with our minute to spin it. So let's give our takeaway from today's episode. So what's your spin, Tommy, in just a minute?
When Richard Nixon was elected in 1968, he continued like sort of the war on crime theme starting to emerge and blamed crime rates on the leniency of the criminal justice system.
Yeah.
He said that the solution, in quotes, the solution to the crime problem is not the quadrupling of funds for any governmental war on poverty, but more convictions. Mm-hmm. And maybe we shouldn't listen to him for reasons that are obvious. Someone who, as president, had to resign before being impeached for something a little
criminal
dirty.
Behavior.
Yeah. So while people may be concerned about safety, especially in high crime areas, research has shown that when concerns about safety are acknowledged, the majority of voters prefer a prevention first approach over tough on crime. Mm-hmm. So it's not that hard. You just have to let communities know you understand what they're going through and you are concerned about their safety. You don't have to beat the tough on crime drum.
Yeah.
Ben, what's your spin?
Let's get tough on crime, tough on crime. I want to get tough on crime, tough on crime. I want to hear your body talk. I mean, does deterrence work? Not. So like you said, it's easy to understand why people would support get tough on crime approaches. It makes sense. It sounds logical. You know, let's get harsh, let's crack down, and that will work. And crime policy is something that's, you know, emotional. When we're talking about, you know, victims and, you know, crime victimization, that's emotional, that appeals to emotion. And people tend to think, you know, like tough on crime is common sense and we don't need
social science.
Yeah. So when I used to teach research methods, I used to use this example, you know, like if we're trying to go to the moon, nobody would say, oh, we don't know, we don't need physicists and we don't need engineers. We know how to do this. Like, obviously we need science to help us get to the moon. But if we're talking about crime policy, people don't think about that as a scientific problem.
Right.
You know,
they think it's very black and white and very simple.
Yeah.
Harsh punishment.
It's logical. It's simple, intuitive. We don't need, you know, science. We don't need social science, particularly about, you know, crime policy.
Right.
So unlike what many people believe, things do work in the future.
Yes.
We'll look at how and why rehabilitation works in maybe the far, far distant future.
We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center and produced by JMU Libraries. If you've listened this far, no one has, reach out to us on Instagram at just_a_minute_pod, and we'll send you a t-shirt. Check out our website linked in show notes to see how you can support our educational programming.